Okay, our tachlis is to try to discuss Heta Iska and its applications. And the first thing is to understand that which we recently learned in the Gemara about how Chazal set up a standard business arrangement in the case, in the old-fashioned business arrangement, where Reuven would supply to Shimon merchandise, and Shimon now would sell the merchandise, and they would split the profits. So Reuven was the investing partner, Shimon was the managing partner, and they would share the profits. So the Gemara tells us that the Das of Chazal is that a proper business arrangement would be such that both people would share the expenses and losses. In other words, it would not be smart for Reuven to give over his merchandise to Shimon to sell, that Shimon would not take any responsibility in case the merchandise goes lost, because then Reuven will be out the entire money. It's not fair for Shimon to have to take all the responsibility. And therefore, Chazal said that the normal way that a person would do an iska, a business deal, would be that I would give merchandise, I would give $1,000 worth of merchandise, and each party would take responsibility for half of the merchandise, and then they would split the profits. Why do they split the profits? Because when Reuven gives $1,000 of merchandise to Shimon, and Shimon now takes responsibility for half of the merchandise, that if something happens to the merchandise, he's going to be responsible. So since he takes full responsibility for the merchandise, it's considered as if he borrowed that merchandise, as if that merchandise is his, because he's the one who's responsible in case anything happens to this merchandise. The half of the merchandise that Reuven is still responsible for, then the pshat is that Shimon is a shomer, he's just a guardian on that merchandise, and he has a job to do with the merchandise of Reuven. So therefore, we consider it palga iska, palga pikadon. In a standard iska, we look at it as if 50% of the merchandise is a milva, as if Reuven lent him $500, because he gave him $500 of merchandise, which now Shimon is completely responsible for. So therefore, it's considered as if it's Shimon's merchandise. And Reuven's $500 worth of merchandise that Reuven is still responsible for, that's his merchandise. And Shimon is going to be selling that merchandise for Reuven. That's why if now the merchandise of $1,000 is sold for $1,100, so there was $100 profit, which means that half of Reuven's merchandise generated $50 of this profit, half of Shimon's merchandise generated half of this profit. Therefore, Reuven and Shimon would now split that $100. The $1,000, $500, if let's say this is the end of the term of their partnership, the $500, which was Shimon's merchandise, that was in the hands of Reuven, now Reuven now is going to give him back $500, which is what was received for Shimon's merchandise. And $500, Reuven is going to give back to Shimon. Shimon is going to give back to Reuven, because Reuven had given him $500 worth of merchandise for him to keep and do what he wants with it and make money with it. So therefore he owes him $500. So when Shimon returns the principal of $1,000, in effect what he's doing is he's returning a pikadon. He's returning half of the merchandise, or the value of the merchandise that belonged to Reuven, and he's paying back the debt that he owes to Reuven for the $500 that Reuven advanced him that he could now do business with. So, at the end we'll finish, right? Yeah. So, the question is, it would seem that this kind of arrangement should be a permitted type of arrangement, because the $100 profit that Shimon is paying back to Reuven, or $50 of it that he's paying back to Reuven, he's not paying $50 because of the $500 loan that Reuven gave to Shimon. He's giving him $50 back because Reuven's merchandise generated $50 worth of profit. because the $1,000 of merchandise generated 100, so that means 500 of the merchandise generated $15 of profit. So seemingly there shouldn't be any shaila of ribis in the standard business of iska. However, the Gemara tells us that there is actually a problem of ribis. The problem of ribis is, why is Shimon being such a nice guy that he's going to be selling Reuven's merchandise? Bishlam with the $500 that Reuven gave to Shimon, that it's Shimon's, that Shimon has full responsibility, that's considered Shimon's merchandise. He's selling it because he wants to generate the $50 of profit. But why is he being such a nice guy that he's selling Reuven's portion? And the only reason why he's doing that is only because Reuven has been nice enough to give him $500 worth of merchandise which to sell. So therefore, in appreciation of the $500 loan that he got from Reuven, that's why now he is a nice guy, and he's going to be matriach, he's going to be tereach, he's going to be busy dealing with Reuven's merchandise. The question is this a ribis deraisa, or is this a ribis drabonah? As if we make up, this is the deal, that I'm giving you $1,000 merchandise, you take 50% responsibility, I'll take 50% responsibility, you are going to sell the merchandise, you are going to give me half of the profit. So if they're kotzates in this manner, is this a ribis deraisa? So from the Gemara we see that it's not a ribis deraisa, because the Gemara says that mois shel yisaimim, money that belongs to yisaimim, bezdin lends out korev l'schar v'rochek l'hefzit, which means that they make this deal that the recipient, Shimon, so to say, who's taking the most of the Yisaimim, he's going to be responsible for everything. And nevertheless, they're going to share the profit. He's going to share the profit with the Yisaimim. So you see that even in the case where Shimon takes full responsibility, the halacha is that it's not considered ribis deraisa, it's only ribis derabanan. So why is it taka only a ribis derabanan in this case? So there's a number of reasons given. The two simplest reasons that are given is, A, it's not for sure that there's going to be a ribis here, because we don't know for sure that there's going to be a profit. And therefore, this whole venture may be a loss. And therefore, it's not considered ribis kitzutza, because we weren't kitzates, vaday, that there should be money. That's a svara that we see a number of times in Ilchus Ribis, that should make it into an avak ribis, into a ribis rabbanan. And the second reason is because it could be that min hatayra, this is not really considered a loan. When I give the money, the $500 to Shimon, with which he's taking full responsibility, and so in Ilchus Ribis we know when a person takes responsibility, it's considered as if it was given to him, and it's a loan to him. But it could be min ha-tayra, that's not really called a loan. Because a loan, the pshat is, I'm giving him the money, and now he's free to do what he wants with it. But in this case, where in the normal iska, there's a limitation on the use of the money. Can only use the money, taka, to generate profit together with my money. So therefore, it's not really min ha-tayra, a true loan. And therefore, there isn't a question of ribis. There's another svara that's discussed, and that is that, is it really extra work that he's doing? Because since we are partners now, every item that I'm selling half is mine and half is his. And therefore, when I sell this item, so to say, I'm selling it so I should get the profit. It's true, it belongs to him also, so he's going to have to take half the profit. But that may not be considered the ribis deraisa. But al kaponim, by an iska, we see from the Gemara that an iska, when a person does an iska, it's not considered a ribis deraisa, it's only drabonim. And the drabonah, the karibis that there is over here, is because the worker is now working for the investing partner for nothing. And that we have sugyas in the Gemara, how do we have to compensate the worker for what he's doing? And lalocha, we paskin like those paskin that say, that if initially we make up a price for your labor, so whatever we make up is sufficient to be considered that I paid you for your labor, even though I'm giving you a very small amount. And that's why in the iska, if a person would make up, I'm giving you money for investment, v'chulu, and I'm going to pay you $1 for your labor, or Moshe says even less than a dollar, and I'm going to give you a dollar for the labor, so then that work, in other words, we can make a deal. When if I could pay you a dollar for building a house, if we make a deal like that, a deal is a deal. As long as I'm not tricking you, you know what it's in store. So then a deal is a deal. So therefore, halacha, if I make up that for all the labor that you're going to do, the price is $1, so then we've taken care of the problem of ribis that's inherent in a simple iska. There's another way to take care of the problem of the schar. And the other way the Gemara tells us is if the managing partner will get a little more of the percentage of the profit, more than his responsibility. If let's say his responsibility is he's 50% responsible for the assets, if the assets go lost, he only has to pay 50, he loses 50%. What happens if we decide that the income will be, you'll get 51% of the income, and I, the investing partner, will get 49%. So then, in effect, what I'm doing is I'm giving you an extra percent of profit, which you don't deserve, because only 50% of the profit your merchandise has generated, and therefore you should only get 50%, but I'm giving you a one more percent, and that's the pay for the fact that you are taking care of the business, that you're the managing partner, and you're running the business. And therefore, the Maisa, since, especially after we learn the sugyas of this schar amolai, what's necessary, so virtually all the place we say that when a person does a hefta iska, itaka, it's not enough just that in the hefta iska it says that I received the dollar, but actually the dollar should be given. The deal is that you'll get the dollar and a person should actually pay the dollar. Now, that's the normal kind of an iska. Now, as time developed, Chazal, the Chachamim of the Deiris, saw that it was necessary to be able to provide people with capital, with money, in order to do business, in order for them to make a parnasa. And ribbis is asur. So as long as, you know, the Yidden were all in lending to Goyim, it wasn't such a problem. But when the Yidden when you have to get the loan, or when Yidden got money from Goyim, it wasn't a problem, but when Yidden are getting money from Yidden, so then the problem is, it's, of course, there's a big mitzvah of Mkesef Talvis Almi, and if a person has money which he could lend interest-free, even though he's not going to get his 0.01% from the bank now, so still, there's a mitzvah of Mkesef Talvis Almi, so you have a mitzvah to lend money. Person just has money sitting, so there's a mitzvah taka to lend it. Of course, only to lend it in a secure manner. Chavetz Chaim says, you're not supposed to put it on Keren HaTzvi. Don't lend it to people who you don't think will pay back or aren't giving you security or co-signers. But of course, there's a mitzvah to lend money without ribis. But nevertheless, sometimes a person needs the money for his own business, or he needs the income that it's generating for his own parnasa. So how does then a person going to be able to get funds in order to do a business? Now, if that person wants funds because he wants to use the funds for a business, that's very nice, but I don't really trust him that much, and I'm not so secure that he's actually going to make the money, and maybe talking the business will go flop, and I'm not ready to lose my principal. So therefore, the Chachmei Hadoyer, through the generations, were misaking that a way that a person would be able to lend money in a way through investing it, but in a way that a person would be very secure about the principal and almost as secure on the profit. And therefore, the Chacham were misaking a nusach. This is already a few hundred years, 400 or 500 years already. They're misaken the nusach of an iska, and they said that we can always do it. In other words, there's ways that a person could prove that something happened. In other words, if I, the investing partner, I give you $1,000. So $500, which is a loan, that's not a risk. There's no risk because you have to give it to me back, even if the business goes kaput. There's nothing left. The $500 you have to give, so that's not an issue. But the other issue is the other half of the principle. The other half of the principle, you were investing for me, so you didn't take responsibility for that half of the principle. So what happens if you're not careful and it's going to go bust? I gave you $1,000, I'm only going to get $500 back. So how do we secure that the $500 that I gave you as a pikadon is going to be actually returned to me? So the answer is that we can make a tanai just like masna shemachinim liyos kashayil, that a shemachinim could say that even though I'm only a shemachinim, or in this case a shemasachar, I can be machayiv myself even if an einus happens. So a person can make conditions, and a person can make conditions, and what type of nemonus, what type of proof will be necessary to prove a case. And therefore, they were misakin, that in order for the managing partner to prove that there was a loss, he's going to have to prove it with two edim. He's going to have two witnesses that will testify that they saw that this business venture failed. Now that's not so easy, because it means that you have to really have been with the person enough times to see exactly where the money went, what was purchased, and that he didn't do anything stupid, any pshia, or anything which would reach the level of Neva Veda. He didn't do anything silly in his handling. Because if he did, if he didn't check into a certain person and he sold and he shouldn't have, etc., so then those witnesses, if they're not there, they're not able to testify that all the deals were done with a proper amount of checking into, etc., then he's not going to be able to prove that he taka lost the money in a way that he wouldn't have to pay as a shomer. And therefore they instituted that in order to be Naaman, to claim that there's a loss here, you have to have Edim, you have to bring witnesses. And witnesses has to be Edim Ksherim. It has to be kosher witnesses, and Rav Moshe writes, and others write, that really would be best if one writes in the Heta Iska, that it should be Edim Ksherim, that are acceptable in a Bezdin Haredi, in an Orthodox Bezdin, only those witnesses, because otherwise if you just write witnesses, so then Mary Jane and somebody else could come, and now I brought two witnesses. But we mean to say two witnesses that would be acceptable in a Bezdin, which means it has to be somebody who's not a Neger B'dover. Can't be anybody who has to do with the business. If he's related to the business, then we can't use such a witness. And you use such a witness, then that's not a kosher witness. So now you're going to have to find somebody who's not related to the business, who has no interest in looking into the business, to make sure that this loss actually happened, and therefore it's very difficult to do that. There are some who wanted to put into the Heta Iska, name the two people who are going to be the witnesses. The only ones I trust is Rabbi Leib Shneiman and Rabbi Yashiv, and they should be the witnesses to be able to, they're the only ones I trust for this. But that, they say that's already making it too much of a haroma. To make it in that way, it means you're making it impossible for the person to be mavar of the truth, and in that case, it's not going to work. So therefore, that's one thing. So one step was, in order to ensure as much as possible that you would get back your principal, at least the money that you initially put in, so they said that you have to, that we agree that the only way you're going to prove it is only if you're going to bring two Edim Ksherim on that actually it was lost. Question is now, but what about the profit? Now, if the business venture made profit, so then there's no problem, we share the profit. But when I'm, let's say, in a situation where I want to lend money, and I'm satisfied to get, let's say, 10% return on the money. Now, you put the money into something, and you made a great deal on some things, and you actually made 40% profit over here. If you made 40% profit on the money, really, according to halacha, you have to give me 20% of the profit. So, but that's not the way we do it, so to say, with the Heta Iska. So the answer is that in the Heta Iska we write that if the profit is above 8%, which means really, in effect, is above 16%, because when we write in the Iska that if the profit is more than 8%, when we say 8%, we mean 8% of the total principal. But really, if there was an 8% return on the total principal, I would only deserve 4%, and he would get 4%. So when we write in the Heta Iska that the return is, let's say, 8%, what we really mean is that we're expecting a return of 16%, and therefore half of that investment at 16% will actually be, in other words, 8%, of the total, and the other half will be for him. So in the Heta Iska it's written that if the profit is more than we'll call it 8% for simplicity, if the profit is more than 8%, I'm going to let him keep any profit over that amount he could keep. Now that's no problem of ribbis. There's no problem of ribbis for me to lend him money and tell him, I'm going to give you more than you even deserve. You know, a malva is allowed to pay a loiva. That's no problem for a malva to give money to a loiva. The problem is what happens in the reverse case. What happens if not so much money was generated? Not so much income was generated? In other words, there wasn't 16% generated of income. So if so, how am I going to be secure that I should get at least a return of 8%? So normally, in a normal iska, you don't have a way to be secure. In a normal iska, in a normal business, if you do a business with somebody, you don't have a way. You hope that he's going to be matzliach. And if he's not matzliach, he won't get such a big return. And if he makes a 10% return on the money, so Yitaka only would get 5% back. However, so the Chachamim said, the Chachmei Hador said, that we could write down that you're only going to be trusted to claim, you, investing managing partner, are only going to be trusted as to the amount of the profit that there was, only if you take a shvua, you swear in a bezdin, how much the profit was. If you're not going to swear in bezdin how much the profit was, I'm not going to believe you. Now, if he brings witnesses on exactly how much the profit is, that's even better than a shvua. Witnesses is a bigger birur than a shvua. But if he doesn't have witnesses, and it's very difficult to find witnesses who are going to be able to testify, people who are not involved, have no financial interest in the business, that they should know exactly what the profit was of a business, is really virtually impossible for them to know. So we're not afraid that he's going to bring witnesses about the amount of profit, but l'chaira, he could swear to say the amount of profit. But it's a scary thing to swear on the amount of profit. A, Yidden don't swear. You know, even if it's the truth, you don't swear. A person will not be naki, will not be free of punishment if a person takes a shvua, even if he's swearing the truth. Second of all, it's very hard to swear exactly the truth, because to be able to swear exactly, figuring out about, did I take that pen? I didn't take the pen from the office. I did take the pen from the office. That's that other money, that extra dollar, this, to know exactly that a person should keep a cheshbon, exactly, a yekesh cheshbon, to know exactly what the profit was, that I should know exactly how much I have to pay back. That's also a very difficult thing, and something which would prevent a person from taking a shvua. What happens if it's a person who's a little bit loose with shvua? He's always saying, he's always doing that. So Rav Moshe says that the eitzah would be is that you write down in the Het Iska that the person is going to have to take a shvua chamura, meaning he's going to have to take a shvua holding a Sefer Torah in a bezdin with the whole tzibur there, with the lights out and the Arna Kodesh open, and that's how he's going to take the shvua. And then we hope that already at that point, the person is not going to be ready to take such a shvua chamura with all that kind of, so to say, terror tactics on him. Now, the Heta Iska, they did not allow the Levush and the early Achrayim did not allow to write in a Heta Iska. Now, it's a little scary. It's still scary, the Heta Iska, because if the guy is going to insist he's going to swear, so he has a right to swear, and if he swears, Yitaka doesn't have to pay. That has to be so, because if you insist, no matter what, you have to pay, then obviously that's ribbis, and you can't do that. So there is a risk in it that, you know, the person, if Yitaka would be a super yeka throughout the entire thing, and he's ready, Taka, to take an oath about what the profit was, Yitaka has a right to do it, and you will, Taka, lose the profit if he swears that there was no profit or the profit was less than the amount that's written in the shtar. And that's really the only reason why the Het Iska works, because there's a chance of you not getting that money. So the chayyur would sound like, well, why not do the other way, Taka? Why don't we, Taka, do it the other way? Let's say that he can only prove profit also with witnesses, and therefore, since he can only prove profit with witnesses, that already is going to be, so to say, almost virtually, as they say, virtually impossible. And this way, I'll really be secure on the money. So the Achrayim said, no. When it comes to the principle that I gave you, which is half a loan, which you have to pay me anyway, the other half is a pikudin. So I'm bari, I'm claiming clearly, you owe me $1,000. I gave you $1,000, half a loan, half pikudin. You owe me bari $1,000. I have a right to say, if you want to free yourself of that, which I'm clear, you owe me. You want to free yourself, you have to give me a good proof. And a good proof is going to be Eidim. But when it comes to the profit, I don't know, I have no time as bari that there was a profit, and you're claiming there wasn't. I don't know if there was a profit or not. Now, on the tzad that there was no profit, if you give me money when there's no profit, if let's say we made 8%, and Lemaisa, according to the document that it says 8% really means 16% is what is the portion that I deserve. And you didn't make 16%, you only made 8%. And now we're going to say, well, listen, you didn't bring a proof, and since you didn't bring a proof that it was not 16%, you're going to have to pay me the 16%, in other words, 8% on my failing. So Lemaisa, you're paying me rivis. Lemaisa, you're giving me rivis. You're giving me money that I don't deserve to have, because my share did not generate that much money, and you're giving me ribis. So that's also to do. You're not allowed to give ribis. But if we make it in a way that that you have a right to swear in order to be mavarer how much the profit was. And now I'm going to put in one more point, one more clause into this at the iska. And I'm going to say, really now, I can demand of you, Adam you're not going to bring. I'm not worried about you bringing Adam. About that there's no, that you didn't have a profit. But her, you have a right to swear. And Lemaisa, if in truth you make that money, so how are you going to give me the 8%? You want to give me 10%. You can't just give me the 8% because you're giving me ribis. Because if the business didn't make profit, you can't give me back 8%. Because why am I getting 8%? Because I lent you money and now you're giving me 8% back. You can't do that. So what is instituted in Heta Iska is Lemaisa, you say you didn't make any money, right? But Lemaisa, I don't believe you, so I have a right to be mashbia you. That was our deal. Our deal was that I could be mashbia you. Sometimes in halacha I could be mashbia you because we're shutfim here, and therefore if you're doing things I could be mashbia you. But even with that, we made a deal that I could be mashbia you. To that you can't just claim you're a bari, that there's no profit, and therefore, and I don't know, and therefore, I can't take any money from you. No. We made up that you're going to have to be mavarer, that there was no profit by you taking an oath. Now, theoretically, you really could take an oath, but you'd like to not take an oath. Now that you'd like to not take an oath, so I can say, I will release you from your obligation of an oath, if you pay me $1,000. As I can be mashbia you, I can make you swear now. I can force you to swear in Beis Din about what the profit was, because I want to know what profit I deserve. So I can be mashbia you. So you're schwitzing. I can be mashbia you, and you're sweating, you don't want to take a shvua. So I can say to you, you know what, let's make a deal. You pay me $1,000, I'm not going to be mashbia you for the amount of profit. So when you're giving me the $1,000, you're not giving me a return on it. You're not giving me for the loan. What you're giving me is, because I'm being a nice guy, I'm releasing you from a shvua. Therefore, that's how the money can be paid. So therefore, the Heta Iska is going to be, I'm giving you money, this money that I'm giving you really for a dual purpose. Half of it you're responsible for, because I'm not going to take responsibility on everything. Half of it I'm responsible for. Whatever money it generates, be'emes, half belongs to me and half belongs to you. I'm making a deal with you. If it generates over what's called 8%, you could keep it. It's no problem for you to keep it. I'm the malver. You're the loiver. I'm the one who lend the money. I can let you have extra money. In case the profit was haka 16%, which means I deserve 8%, so he's giving me my 8%. That's my profit. If the profit was 32%, I was mostly you the rest. Just give me the profit, which is my 8%. Give me the 8%, I get my profit. What happens if there was no profit? You want to claim there's no profit? Then you have to swear. You know what? I'm going to release you from the Yeshua if you will pay me. Guess what? I picked a number. 8% of the profit. That number is the number that's going to free you now from Yeshua. Now, since this number is really an outside thing of our business deal. It's not really that 8%, in case there is no profit, the 8% that you're paying is not really, so to say, inherent part of the business deal. It's just another, it's I remove an irritant from you that we made a deal. I'll get rid of the shvua if you'll pay me this money. So really, at the time when we make the iska, we don't really even have to make that up yet. I don't, and let's say I'm not even make up. I'm giving you money, you want a loan. I'm not going to use the word loan. I'm going to say I'm going to give you an iska. I'll give you money for an iska. Iska is 50-50. But we say, we'll wake up, well, what number should we make? What should the sum hispashrus be? What should the pshara money be? In other words, what should that, what we call the 8%, what should that pshara mean? The sum hispashrus, what should that sum of the pshara should be? So we don't have to determine it right away. Because as soon as I give you the money, whatever money you're generating, you're making money on it, half goes to me, half goes to you. A month later, I'll decide, you know what? Let's make it 8%. So what we're doing, the 8% really is saying, I'm meichel you if there's more than 8% of profit. And if there's less than 8% of profit and you want to claim it, you're going to have to swear. And therefore, I'll be meichel you the shvua. So it's not something even that amount doesn't have to. Many times, it's like a little confusing. A person needs money for a deal and all that. And it depends, you know, where am I going to get the money from? I don't have the cash available. I'm going to have to get it from a bank or something. I don't know yet how much I'm going to pay for that money. And therefore, that's going to determine how much I'm going to charge you for the money, etc. Since this is all a business, it's not a loan. So I don't know yet. So it doesn't matter if I don't say it right away. Because even if I don't say it, as long as the money l'chadchil is given, b'tayras iska, meaning that you take 50%, I take 50%, and we generate income, and that income belongs to me, half and half, later on we can make up, I'll be mostly you what's over the number, and what's under the number, we can will be the pshara gelt to be meichel the shvua. So, in order for an iska, I just wrote a number of points that a person should be careful about, what the place can discuss about when a person does a hetta iska. The first thing that everybody says is that people should understand the hetta iska. It's not a lachash, it's not like a superstitious statement, you say hetta iska, but really the person should understand that what's happening here is, it's not a full loan, it's a kind of a half a loan. And half you're investing for me the money, and the money that you generate, the profit you generate, that's going to be shared. Whether b'di'evit, chalila, you have to ask the shayla if they don't know. The second is that in the iska it shouldn't be written that a lashon of halva. It shouldn't say in the iska halva or interest on the loan, etc. Because obviously what we're trying to say is it's not so. Now you'll notice on the hetiska that we wrote, it says that even though there are documents drawn up on this transaction, written in the terms of loan, but this document clarifies that which is meant there was just made to make it easy calculations or to process this, but in actuality, what really is happening is there's an iska here. V'chatchila, the iska should be with a ksav. There's really, it doesn't really have to be written. Because really what's happening, I'm about to make a business deal with you, and I can give you money, and we could do everything just on our word alone, and say, I'm giving you the money, 50-50, the profit, whatever profit over 8% you keep, under 8% I'm going to lose, but I'm going to make you swear, and I'm telling you right now, I'm going to make you swear, and if you don't want to swear, I'm making a deal with you that, you know, that I agree, if you'll pay me 8%, then I won't be able to force you to swear. So we could really do all that balpet. But nevertheless, it's l'chadchila that it should be written, and l'chadchila, the recipient, the investing partner, should sign that he received it. It's important, according to many paiskim, that you should actually give the schar b'teila. You have to, as it says in the shtar, that I received the $1 consideration for doing the work of this iska, and therefore you should give that dollar. Also, the number, the schum hispashrus, should not be an exorbitant kind of a number. You know, to write a high number, which is not realistic, that's a number that would generate profits and that kind of a thing. You know, sometimes a person is going to, had a deal and he had once a ribis, That's one of the eights that some poskim discussed, that they made a bad deal once without doing a heter iska, and there was a lot of interest money that was owed, and now what I'd like to do is, at this point on, I want to make a heter iska, but I'm going to say that, you know, I expect the profit of 130%, and this way, in 1 month, I'm going to be able to, so to say, get enough money to make up, you know, the past. So first of all, it's not so pasha that it's mutter, because maybe this kind of a deal, which is an extraordinary deal, you're only doing because at one time he lent you money. So that alone may be a problem of ribis. But even if without that, but in, the document has to be something which is a reasonable amount of money. And we'll come back to that on the question of when a person is buying a house. And when a person writes the number that is used to, for the, we'll call it the schum tzvashrus, the pshara geld, it doesn't have to be a specific number. It doesn't have to be 8%. It could be 2% above prime. It could be anything. It could be 25 bananas. Anything we can make up that if I agree that if you'll give me this amount, I'll be merchel you the shavua. So we could write in at that time or any time. Once the money initially was given as an iska, we can write in any time what the pshara should be. And that pshara could be, and it could be, it'll be, first of all, it'll be 2% of this, and it'll be also that, and also you're going to have to do this and that. Whatever a person writes there, really, in effect, what he's doing is just saying, any profit above this amount, I'm letting you keep, and if you claim that the profit was less than this total amount, then you're going to have to swear, but I agree that if all this is done, then I'll be merkel you b'shvua. The question is, one of the big questions is that what happens if a person, so basically if a person is taking the money because I have a business and I want to invest it in a business, so then we understand how the heter iska works. But what happens if a person is taking the money, let's say first, an easier case, when a person is taking money, wants to borrow money from a friend because he wants to make a down payment on a house, or he wants to buy a house. So if he wants to buy a house, so the person is going to want 8%, which means, let's say he'll want 8%, which means that really, on his chelik of the investment, it's 16%. To say that the house is going to go up in value 16%, that's a reasonable number, to say that it'll go up in value 16% each year, is, maybe at some time, was a good number, but it's not pashut. In other words, I know where the money went, and I know what the prices of houses is. I know how much about the houses went up in price. And it's not going to go up so much. And if it goes up 3%, 5%, so I know where the money is. And if I know where the money is, as Rav Moshe writes, and earlier they also write, I can't be mashbia you if I know the answer. I don't have a right to ask you to swear if I know the answer. And therefore, there's some that write that it is better. Rav Moshe also writes that it may be better when a person is doing a deal on a house, that when you know what the return, so to say, is going to be, that it's better to do a different kind of a document. And that's the document, which they call a sale-lease document, which is something which Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, and Rav Shlomo Miller Shlita wrote up a Nusach in English. And that works differently. And the way that works is, that let's say, L'mashal, I have a house, talk 40 years ago, a house for $100,000. And I can't do big numbers. The house is $100,000. And this person is going to lend me $200,000 for the house. And then I'm going to buy the house. And he is going to, let's say, he'll carry, or somebody else is going to carry, the bank will carry, let's say, the rest of it will be a mortgage on that. So he's going to give me $200,000, but there's going to be, well, let me make it more simple. I'm buying the house from this person, and he is going to give me $200,000, and he's going to carry the rest, the other $20,000. He's going to carry the rest. The other $80,000, he's going to carry. Now, he would like to carry it with an interest of 8%. So, l'chari, that's a problem. That's a problem of ribis. Elawat will say that he's giving me the $200,000 as an iska, and he now has 10%, so to say, of my house, right? Because he gave me $20,000. The house is worth $100,000. So he gave me $20,000. $10,000 was a loan. $10,000 was investment. I invested it by buying in the house. So now, out of the $10,000, he, let's say, has a partnership share in this house of of 10%. And that 10% is not going to generate that much profit over the time. So he's not going to be able to get an 8% return on that money. So Ramesh writes that the way that one should do it is the following. Instead of looking at it as that I bought the house from him, I owe him $800,000, and he gave me $200,000. Let's look at it that the $200,000, the $20,000, I keep on going back and forth, that the $20,000 that he gave me means that that's my ownership in the house. The $80,000 that I still owe him means it's still his house. So now this house is shared. I have 20% of the house, and he has 80% of the house. Now, since I'm using the house, I have to pay him rent for his share of the house. So on the rest of the house, on the $80,000, let's say we make an 8%, so to say, quote, mortgage interest. So what we're really doing is that on his percent of the house, I'm going to pay 8% rent for his chelik of the house. His chelik of the house now is $80,000. I'm going to pay 8% as the not as an interest payment to him, but as a rental to him because it's his house, and I'm renting his house. So if I rent his house, I don't know exactly what the number is going to be, but 8% of Ronnie Quick, 8% of this $80,000 is 1% is 8 is $664, $640 probably. Is going to be the rental that I'm paying him. Now, of that money, it's not really going to be, let's say we'll call it $640, is not the real number, but really the number would be on the schedule, it'll be $639, and $1 will be the principal. Right? Most of it will be interest. You'll figure out the numbers exactly, please. But most of the money will be interest, and some of it will be principal. So what's happening really is that when I make a payment to you, I'm going to be buying a little bit more of the house from you, and every month that I pay you a little bit more principal, my house becomes more, your house becomes less, and therefore we're going to charge less interest. So we're going to have a rental agreement which matches exactly the amortization schedule. In other words, as I pay principal, I own more of the house, which means I should pay rent for less than the house, less of the house. And therefore, just like on the schedule, the interest payments go down and the principal goes up, so too my rental will be exactly what that principal is. So actually, there was no loan here whatsoever. Really, what happened was that the $200,000, that's a separate thing. The $200,000, Laura, let's say I had the $20,000 to put down. I got $80,000 from him. That $80,000 I didn't get from him. I didn't buy his share of the house. He still owns it, and I'm going to pay a rent. That's what Ramesha writes, that one it would be smarter to do the mortgage in that way rather than to do it another way, because the numbers would be too high to justify that kind of an interest payment. So that there's an eitzah for. But what about the eitzah, or even sometimes the house itself? But what about if a person is borrowing the money, and he's not borrowing the money, I know he's not borrowing the money to put it into an investment, but he's borrowing the money because he owes Lebrea Market. So he owes Lebrea Market money, and he's borrowing, needs $1,000 from me, and I'm going to, so to say, make a hat to iska with him. And where is there gain? So I know in that case that there is no profits. So if there's no profits, so Bezois, I can't be mashbia him if I know that there's nothing there. When I don't know, I can be mashbia. But if I do know, I can't be mashbia. So Rav Yehuda, Rav Yaakov Bloy says, if he is borrowing the money to pay the bill, but I don't know that, I think he's borrowing the money maybe to put it into a business. So he says, then, as far as I'm concerned, I'm allowed to take interest over here. Because I could be mashbia him. Because I don't know what you're using it for. Maybe you made a profit. So if I don't know why you took it, maybe you took it for a business venture. You claim you didn't. You used it to pay Lebrea Market. So swear that there was no profit, and swear that that's what it was for. So if I don't know, then I still would have a head to, because the reason why he pays the money is to release my claim of him swearing. So in this case, I think I have a right to make him swear, because I don't know. But if I know and you know that you're taking the money just to pay Lebrea Market, so in that case, you know, does it pass to say you have to iska? So some places say, Tak, in that case you shouldn't. You have to look for different etzah, and not to do a het to iska. But if the person that is borrowing the money for Librea Market has some other assets, he has some other business, then in the het to iska, when we don't write specifically that I gave him money to pay Librea Market, but rather I gave him money with which to do an investment. So even though he's now taking this cash and giving me and using it to pay La Brea Market, but he does have a business, and now instead that $1,000 he's taking, so to say, he's being maknet to me $1,000 in his business. $500 really is the loan, but $500 he's giving me a schus in his business, that any income that business generates, $500 worth of, you know, so to say, asset of that business, that's what the iska would be going for. So that's what they're making. The question is, what happens if, you know, unfortunately a person doesn't have any assets and he doesn't have any kind of thing to put it in? Can you do it? Someone has discussed maybe if the guy has a car, but he really theoretically could rent the car. So maybe he did rent the car. Maybe he did use some of his things to raise, you know, the funds. So maybe it would be a small loan. There will be a mokum to be mako. At that point, you have to ask the Gedolei HaPoskim about whether one should rely in that case on using a het to iska. And also, the similar issue we have is, let's say, if one partner wants to lend money to the partnership, and the partners are both managing partners, so to say. Now, if one of the partners wants to put money into the business, and he'd like to get a return of interest on the money that he's putting in, so in that case, can he now make his partner swear if he himself knows everything that's going on? Hishlam, if I'm an investing partner, I don't know what's happening. But if I'm not an investing partner, so then I can't be much beer you, because I'm a managing partner. And sorry, we're both managing, in other words, we're both involved in the business, then there may not be a heter for a heter iska. So some say, Taka, there is none. And some say, but the money that now I'm putting into the business, so really what I'm doing is, I am putting money in, I'm putting $1,000 in, $500 of it is, so to say, my chelik of the business, $500 isn't his, $500 of it is a loan to my partner. You know, and of that, 50% is a loan and 50% is an investment. So we're investing in that business. So who says that partner has to keep that money in this business? Maybe that partner also could exchange, instead of having the cash there and giving me a schus in this business, which I know about, maybe he's going to switch it into it for a different business, and in that business I don't know. So that's what the Bris Yehuda writes, that even in the case of a partnership, there can be. Now, there are times when the partnership itself is not going to be an Isa of Rivas, and that's too complicated. But that also is a shaila. If when a partner lends into a business, and the business is going to pay the interest, is that always going to be a shaila of Rivas, even if it's all Jewish partners? Right. Also, we see from the Gemara that when you write a het to iska, you have to write it clearly and not just if, let's say, we know I'm going to do a deal of $1,000 for a year at 10% interest, so the end will be $1,100. So we learned in the Gemara, and that's Allah also, that you can't give a document saying that, you know, that at the end of the year you have to return to me $1,100. Because we don't know, is that 1,100 interest? Is that 1,100, you know, is that the principal of the 1,100? So you can't be kailo the whole thing. It has to be clear. That which is the principal, and that which is the payment, which is the revach money, or the hispashrus money. Now, you can also have an arevus on an iska. In other words, I can be makabel to be an orev on an iska. In other words, let's say I give somebody $1,000 with a het to iska, and now, but I would like somebody to secure this, right? And anytime in a loan, you want to secure it. So maybe I want to secure this iska with somebody else. So if there's nothing wrong with securing that, whatever the managing partner is going to have to pay at the end of the day, then he is securing that amount that he will pay. If there's a question of a loan with interest, then there's a problem of being an oreif on a loan of interest. But over here, we don't have he's not securing a loan of interest. He's securing an interest-free, half interest-free loan and half business, which I am, the oreif is mekabel achrayus, that if he does not want to swear and he obligates himself to pay 8% instead of swearing, the oreif is accepting responsibility to pay that. So you are allowed to have an oreif on a heter iska. The question is, are you allowed to have, as we discussed in the last year, and that's the question where a heter iska may come up, and that is that if, let's say, I lend you, a guy. In which case, if I lend a guy, let's say, $100,000 with interest, and now I'm going to have a yid who's going to be securing that loan. So a yid is going to secure the loan. So if it would be, as we mentioned, if this is a kind of an orev, who's an orev stam, that only after all efforts have been made to collect the money from the guy, and now it's not 100,000, it's 110,000, the total sum that's owed. If all efforts have been made and I can't get the money from him, and now I go to the Arev, that's not a problem. Because he's an Arev of 110,000, and I'm collecting 110,000, that's not a problem. What happens if it's an Arev that you have a right, you can go either way? Notice, if I want, I can go to the guy for the money, or if I want, I can go to the Yid. So that's a case of an Arev Kavlan, even though I'm supposed to go, let's say, to the Yid first. But Lamais, if the Yid says, I don't have, to the guy first. Even though if the guy says, I don't have to follow through and take him to Beis Din or make a collection against him, I can go to the other person. So in that case, there, the halacha we hold that an Arev Kavlan is asur to be an Arev. Why? Because if the Yid is going to now come to the Arev to collect, we look at it as if originally the Yid lent the guy, the other Yid, the money, the 100,000, and this Arev lent it to the guy. And when I take back the 110 from the Yid now, what I'm actually doing is taking back the 100 which I lent him, plus the 10% of interest. So if eventually I collect from him, it's considered as if that I lent him the money, and that's why I'm collecting from him. How did I go to him? Teretz says, when he was in Arev, it was as if I gave him the money, and he gave it to the guy. And therefore, there would be a problem. So, in that kind of a case, when a person is going to be in Arev, then the Yid would have to make a Hefta Iska with the Arev, and write that if the fact comes out that we do make a collection from the Arev, if a collection is ever made from the Arev, which will mean then that the loan was actually made from the Yid to the Yid, and then the Yid to the guy, then the money that I'm giving to you should be takal pi hetha iska. In other words, and again, as a partial investment and partial loan, otherwise there will be actually a real problem of ribs. Now, for business people, who, let's say, are buying merchandise on credit, so that is, you know, is an issue of ribs, because if I'm going to take merchandise and if I pay cash now, he gives me this price. But if I want terms, I'm going to have to pay a higher price. Or I'm going to have to pay interest until I pay up my thing. So if you're doing with a guy, that's not a problem. But if you're buying from a yid, so then there's a problem. And even if you do net 10, 30 days, etc., it's very weak heterim in the practical world, because there is no really kavuadika way of how business goes. So therefore, the parshtus is that makes a problem of interest, of ribis, that if I take merchandise, and if I pay cash, it's this price, and if I don't pay cash now, but you let me delay payments for a month, then I'm going to have to pay a higher price, even though you call it a cash discount, that you'll charge me only $98 if I pay today, and it's a dollar, the regular price, later. It's not pashut, it's very not pashut that heter ever works. And therefore, in that case, the person should be riding ahead to Iska. And what does that mean? What it means is he's saying that the merchandise that I'm buying from you, I'm not buying from you $100 of merchandise and I owe you now $100. What I'm doing is I'm taking that merchandise as Iska. I'm taking the merchandise with which I'm going to do business. Half of the merchandise is going to be profit for you, and half of the merchandise will be profit for me. What is any profit that is above whatever that credit payment will be, that money I can keep, just like we said in the Hetiska. Anything over 8% I can keep. So the Pshara Geld is what? Any cost that I have that would, in by Goyim, would be called any credit cost that I had, all that credit cost is the amount of money which anything above it I could keep. And if I claim that the profit was less than this number, then you're maskim that I could give you that money to potter me from swearing. So a person who's in business and buying merchandise, he knows he buys from Yidden, and he knows that he has this issue, so he should be writing this kind of a het iska. Het iska, that any merchandise that I'm getting from you is being done al pi iska, and therefore, and whatever the quote credit price, whatever the credit cost is for the item, that is the pshara geld, that anything above it I could keep, and anything, if the profit was less than this, in other words, if the half the profit, meaning, was less than this, then this is the money that I'm giving to free myself from the shvua. Or, it's even preferred, if a person like that, who does business like that often, instead of, would write a het to iska klali, a general het to iska contract, saying, and he would notify each one of his Jewish vendors that he sells, that sell to him, that this is the way everything that I'm buying from you is going to be, I'll pay this het to iska, right? Theoretically, if I want, I could swear that there won't be a profit and I won't have to pay you whatever that credit is. But Lemaisa, in that way, the person would save himself from a question of ribis. If a person is in a more sophisticated type of business with investments and sales and bonds and this, v'chulu, v'chulu, so there is also a het to iska klali that is done there. So all the places say it's better if every deal you would talk right, al pi het iska, you have it printed, and as long as the people know and are aware that this is the way we're doing the business, so then hopefully Be'ez Hashem one would free himself from the problem of ribis.